this seems to be the new trend. Something that's happening across the region is people being moved from prison into labor situations.
New reports of Uyghurs being forced into Chinese labor camps. It's Monday, December 17th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, new strategies emerged to counter China in Africa. The complicated Huawei case. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Some of the hundreds of thousands of Muslim Uyghurs who are being rounded up by Chinese authorities and put into massive re-education camps in western China are being moved into forced labor. The New York Times Sunday reported that thousands have been shown on Chinese television as what the report said were models of repentance, earning good pay and political salvation as factory workers. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke on Skype about this with Darren Byler, a lecturer at the University of Washington in Seattle. His focus is on the plight of China's Uyghur population. He toured the area of western China in April.
What's happening is something quite new, really just since September or October of this year, 2018. We've begun to see Uyghurs that have been detained in re-education camps, internment camps, seeing them moved from the confinement space, from the prison space, into working spaces, oftentimes really located very close to the camp, so often inside the same compound. And this seems to be the new trend, something that's happening across the province, across the region, is people being moved from prison into labor situations.
The Chinese are saying that they are educating the people to become more valuable Chinese citizens living inside the borders of China by, number one, giving them language, because many do not speak Chinese, and the second, to give them valuable tools. How do you counter that?
That is their approach, is to train people to speak Chinese. In the camp system, Uyghurs are not permitted to use their own language. Instead, they have to only speak in Chinese, and being in order to graduate from the camp system and work and move into the factory space, you need to pass Chinese language exams. So that's the reports we've heard. You also need to pass ideology tests, your political acumen, you proving that you're loyal to the state and that you're repentant for your past, you know, religious behavior, your past belief in Islam, all of those sorts of things.
You apparently spoke to some people who had intimate knowledge of what is happening now as far as the forced labor is concerned. Can you relate that to us?
Yeah, I won't speak in very specific terms because I need to protect the identities of my Uyghur contacts. But what one person told me is that his brother was scheduled to graduate from the camp because he had passed all of these tests of language and ideology. But as he was being released, they then gave him a 3-year sentence of labor in a clothing factory. And he's now working as a seamstress, running a sewing machine in this factory. They also told him that if he works hard, works well, that it's possible he could be released after 1 year and then be placed under house arrest. And continue his work in a garment factory. So this suggests to me a few things. One of the things it suggests is that the people that are being sent from the camps into these other spaces are people that are in the most lenient level of the camp, because there's around 4 levels from what we've heard in the camps, people that are under, you know, stringent guard to the most lenient level. And I think the people that are released, sent to work in factories, are people that are in that most lenient category, people that are seen as pliable and having a potential future as productive workers.
Darren told us that China has gone from denying the existence of the camps to its stance that the camps are bringing about positive results. That change, he says, might be due to increased Western media coverage. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. North Korea marks 7th anniversary of Kim Jong-il death. Is Trump on path to strategic patience on North Korea? Executives arrest, security worries stymie Huawei's reach. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are found on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The Trump administration has unveiled a new strategy for Africa that's focused on countering Chinese and Russian influence on the resource-rich continent. And the administration is demanding more accountability for American aid. VOA's Patsy Whitaker-Swara has more from the White House.
Chinese President Xi Jinping has long been courting African leaders at events like September's China-Africa Forum. Chinese-funded infrastructure projects are popping up all over Africa. At the conservative-leaning think tank, the Heritage Foundation, the administration launched a new strategy on Africa.
Well, Kim, thanks very much. And,
officials say it's designed to counter China's growing power, as well as Russia's attempts to increase its influence in the resource-rich continent.
The predatory practices pursued by China and Russia stunt economic growth in Africa, threaten the financial independence of African nations, inhibit opportunities for U.S. investment, interfere with U.S. military operations, and pose a significant threat to U.S. national security interests.
Bolton said the goal of the strategy is to advance trade and commercial ties, counter the threat of terrorism, and ensure accountability for American aid.
We had the speech. We'll take a look at the speech and look at the detail of the speech, and we'll give a comment later on that. But we are happy to understand that finally, America has a strategy that is purposeful towards Africa.
The new Africa strategy is in line with the Trump administration's foreign policy that portrays China as a strategic competitor. Some analysts see the us-versus-them approach as counterproductive, including Mike Fuchs from the left-leaning Center for American Progress.
Which we should be creating partnerships with countries in Africa based on our interests and how we can work together to pursue shared interests. This is not, again, a battleground between the United States and China.
Bolton also warned the U.S. will reevaluate its support for UN peacekeeping missions.
Our objective is to resolve conflicts, not freeze them in perpetuity.
The U.S. will also review aid to countries whose governance it finds unaccountable. Bolton singled out South Sudan, signaling that all aid may soon end for the war-torn country. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
China has rallied the power of its one-party state behind tech giant Huawei to boost public support for the company's chief financial officer, Meng Wanzhou. But the case is getting increasingly complex, with the arrest of two Canadian citizens in apparent retaliation as Meng awaits possible extradition to the United States from Canada. VOA's Bill Ide files from Beijing.
Before Huawei chief financial officer Meng Wanzhou was released on bail, China moved quickly, arresting a Canadian businessman and a former diplomat. Beijing says the cases are not connected, but has made it clear from the start that if Meng is not released immediately, there will be consequences. An online video commentary from the editor-in-chief of the party-backed nationalistic tabloid, The Global Times, and its headline was blunter.
China will definitely take retaliatory measures against Canada. I believe Canada expects as much along with international public.
Not all agree with Hu's interpretation of public opinion and the Huawei case, or the arrests of the two Canadian citizens in China. In a Skype interview, human rights lawyer Dr. Teng Biao told VOA's Mandarin service that the vague charges of violating national security that both men face can easily be used for political manipulation.
Based on previous cases, many people's normal activities, such as rights activism, have also been charged as subversion of state power or inciting subversion of state power.
The businessman, Michael Spavor, has deep contacts with North Korea and previously helped former NBA star Dennis Rodman on trips to the reclusive country to meet leader Kim Jong-un. Michael Korvig currently works for the Hong Kong-based International Crisis Group. He took a leave of absence from the Canadian Foreign Affairs Department in 2016. As for Meng, U.S. authorities allege she misled banks about Huawei's control of a company operating in Iran. Those actions put the banks at risk of violating U.S. sanctions. Canada says it is handling her case in accordance with the law, but has also urged Washington not to politicize the process. President Donald Trump told Reuters in an interview that he could intervene in the case if it would help secure a trade deal with Beijing. On the streets in Beijing, some we spoke with expressed support for Meng and concern that the case is more about limiting the tech giant's competitive ability.
U.S. law has always encouraged competition because it's only through competition that societies and technology advance.
The U.S. has shown growing fears about the rise and development of China.
However, when asked whether they agreed with calls from state media and companies in China to boycott products such as Apple in response, those we spoke with said that is more a matter of personal choice. Bill Eyde, VOA News, Beijing.
Coming up, fewer sharks may be good for swimmers, but not for the sharks. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia. China, Pakistan, and Afghanistan have signed a trilateral understanding to enhance counterterrorism security cooperation and collectively reiterated their call for the Taliban insurgency to join Afghan peace talks. The foreign ministers of the three countries met in Afghanistan's capital, Kabul. Meet with us at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, shark numbers along the Queensland coast have declined by more than 90% for some species in the past 5 decades. That's according to new research that calls for better protection for threatened species in Australian waters. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australia has 170 types of sharks out of approximately 440 species globally. Great white and grey nurse sharks already are listed as threatened in Australian waters. Researchers from the University of Queensland and Griffith University have analysed data from shark control programs to gauge changes in populations over the past 5 decades. Nets and baited hooks have been used in Queensland to reduce the risk of attacks on swimmers and surfers. The research teams looked at the number of white, tiger, hammerhead and whaler sharks caught between the early 1960s to 2016. What they found was a shock, according to George Roth from the University of Queensland, who was one of the authors of the study.
The results are quite striking. So what we found over the last 50 years is a dramatic decline in the numbers of apex sharks on the Queensland coastline. So the number of large sharks on our beaches have declined by between 74 and 92%. At the same time, the size of the sharks are also getting smaller. So there are fewer and smaller sharks on Queensland beaches than there were 50 years ago. This includes the globally endangered hammerhead sharks that have declined by up to 92%. And importantly, white sharks that are listed as vulnerable in Australia have shown no sign of recovery, despite protections that have been put in place over 2 decades ago to stop fishing.
Researchers are blaming overfishing for a sharp fall in hammerhead and great white shark populations. They say that the apparent collapse of certain shark species would indicate that the overall health of the oceans is also in decline. In January 2014, the Western Australian government responded to a series of attacks with a controversial catch-and-kill policy. Almost 70 sharks were caught and shot before the strategy was abandoned after a recommendation by environmental officials. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. You'll also find us, of course, on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. VOA Asia Facebook, a great way to get in touch with us if you'd like to send us a message. You can also send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. And, of course, you can hear us on the radio. Great radio stations across Asia, like DZUP, 1602 AM Radio, at the University of the Philippines Diliman in Quezon City. Thanks for tuning in. Our thanks as well go to Director Tracy Carter, our engineer Aiden Utku, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a nice day. Thank you.